Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, we just finished an interview with Laura Corbeth,
right,
author of this book, My Courage to Tell. Great book.
Got to go ahead and read this one.
Yes.
It's well worth the few hours that it's going to take you to read it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Compelling writing, very personal.
Yeah.
But not sappy by any means.
That's right.
She doesn't become maudlin. She mm-hmm. doesn't. She said in the interview, I just wanted to stick with the facts.
Right.
And she does. She does exactly that.
Yeah.
She doesn't veer off very much.
Mm-hmm.
She sticks very close to the narrative that she wanted to, the story that she wanted to tell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Laura is now in her mid-50s, but she writes about abuse that she experienced at the hands of her brother
yeah.
as she was growing up. This isn't the typical abuse that we hear about, mm-hmm. Physical or sexual abuse or anything like that. We're talking about psychological abuse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way that she talked about the difference between psychological abuse, emotional abuse.
I like her distinction.
And then even mm-hmm. distinguishing it from right. physical and sexual abuse, mm-hmm. but similar consequences.
Right. The psychological and emotional abuse doesn't have the purient interest that sexual mm-hmm. and emotional, physical mm-hmm. abuse have, which makes headlines and mm-hmm. somehow people might be more interested. But as she said, it's just as devastating. Psychological right. and emotional abuse are yeah. just as devastating.
Right.
And it's one of those hidden problems.
Right.
You know, hidden. People don't discuss it. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it much. But it's just as damaging. It yeah. reminds me of the ACEs study that reminded us that neglect can be as bad as
yeah.
abuse.
Adverse childhood experiences.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so Laura works now with her husband. They own their own business
right.
mm-hmm. as graphic design and marketers, mm-hmm. marketing businesses, rescue dogs, and
right.
she has a son. But she is so engaging. Her laugh is
infectious. Right?
Is,
it brightens up your her laugh will brighten your day.
You can tell she is just a happy mm-hmm. good person.
It's probably her laugh has probably served her well over time.
Yeah, we talk a little bit
yeah,
about that in
right.
in the interview. But again, the book is My Courage to Tell. It goes on sale. Well, this podcast is going to post on Saturday the 23rd, and so it went on sale just this past Tuesday.
On the 19th.
The 18th. Yeah. The 18th.
No, 19th.
Well, oh, yeah, the 19th. Mm-hmm. Tuesday. Today's the 18th. Yeah. We're recording
right.
this on Monday. It
right.
goes out on Tuesday, and it's going to post on Saturday. Keep
no,
up with that.
I can't. You lost me at the 18th.
So it went on sale on the 19th, and she has a special with it now, and we've been
right.
talking about it all week. But she has a special out now so that you can, if you go to her website, you can get a discount if you sign up for something on YouTube.
Amazon.
Not on YouTube. On Amazon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Woo. It is late.
Long day.
Monday night.
7:30.
We are, we've been here for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but definitely get this book. You will not, if you are at all interested in the experiences of a person who had some challenging adverse childhood events,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
definitely read this book and see, learn about her experience and how she worked through it. Because
right.
To hear her and see how she talks about how she's come through the other side is inspiring.
It's a process, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
All right. That is it. We hope you enjoyed. Please write to us. Let us know what you think about it. And if you have any other questions for her, the link to her, all of her contact mm-hmm. and everything is in the show notes.
Right.
So, all right.
Very good.
Enjoy the podcast.
Hi, guys.
Oh.
Hey.
Hey.
I was having trouble with Firefox. Sorry about that. I think Firefox doesn't have the right plugin, so I went into Chrome, and here I am.
There you are. Well, we're glad you're here, and we got a nice picture of a puppy.
Yeah, Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So great to be here.
Well, it's good to finally talk to you. We've been emailing back and forth for a little while, and it's great to finally talk to you.
Oh, you too. I'm excited.
Now, you were telling me before that you have a couple of interviews set up. Have you done any interviews yet?
I had one interview with the At 70/30 campaign in the UK. It wasn't a podcast. It was an introduction to the ambassadors there, and they have supported the book. And so I basically had the phone call with them, and anybody could have joined in to hear what I was talking about, and there were a few people, and it was not a video call, but it was great to at least get me started with talking. This is new to me, so it was a good phone call, and they have some, they're very supportive in the book and what I'm trying to talk about, so it works very much with what they're doing.
Well, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, we are very, very happy to have the opportunity to talk with you and to share some of this important perspectives and important topics with you know, some of our listeners that, you know, a lot of people who may be dealing with some of these same issues. So we're very excited to be talking about it.
Well, that's great. Yep. Yes, I think it's important to start the conversation as well.
Well, great. Well, and I think that we got connected with you when you sent an email after our interview with, was it our interview with Shannon Thomas?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So Shannon's book was one of the books that I had read when I started exploring things with my psychologist, and mm-hmm. I happened to go to her Twitter feed and saw the interview and thought, I'll give it a shot. I'll see if they want to talk to me.
Right. Well, we're glad that you did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. We're really excited to get into the book and talk about the book, but tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you are, what you're, those kinds of fun things.
Yeah. So I live in Canada. I'm in Ontario, just I'm north of Toronto. For anybody that doesn't know where Ontario is, it borders on the New York State and the Michigan State. I've been married for 22 years. I have a son who goes to university, and I live with my husband, and we are rescued two dogs. Mm-hmm. we're entrepreneurs. We've had a marketing and graphic design business for 22 years. And so I was really pleased that you wanted to talk tonight, because one of the things that we do early in the mornings is we take our rescue dogs for wonderful walks, mm-hmm. and enjoy watching them and seeing the great life that they have. And it gives me a great chance in the morning to become mindful and grateful for my day. So that's a little bit about me.
Fantastic.
Well, when you said I've been married I thought you were going to say four times. And I was going to say, wait a minute, that wasn't in the book. So I'm going to take my glasses off and recover from that one. So don't do that to me. Okay, so the dogs were interesting stories. Glad you're taking care of them. We have greyhounds.
Oh,
here in
do?
Florida, who are favorite rescue dogs.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so it's a fairly common practice here, especially rescuing the greyhounds. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we went down to New York State, and we rescued one of the dogs from there. And it wasn't a big deal to bring the dog across the border. And mm-hmm. so it was very easy to go across. We went down by Niagara Falls and went across. And we brought back a little Yorkie.
Yeah.
And so
mm-hmm. yeah. And also, I know where Toronto is because I lived across the lake from you for a while. I lived in Erie, Pennsylvania. So we used to, when we needed a breath of civilization, we would drive around the western edge of the lake and come to Toronto for a few days. So we'd get refreshed and then we could face it again. So thank you very much for contributing to that.
Yeah.
Laura, I never know what he's gonna say or what he's gonna talk about. It's always a surprise.
Well, never mind. Okay, so,
tell us
more about you. So you have the dogs. You have. Oh, by the way, I like your husband.
You like my husband?
Well, I mean, I don't know him. We haven't been out or anything, but
this is an example of what I'm talking about.
No, he sounds. He sounds like a decent person.
Yes.
Yeah, everything you wrote about, I said, this is a guy I'd like to go for a walk or have dinner or something with. He just sounds like a wholesome, supportive guy. So there aren't many of those, you know.
Yeah. You know what? Have you ever had anybody cry on your show? No, just kidding.
Yes, Bernie does all the time.
I'm so blessed.
You are. You really are.
Yeah. This is somebody you want on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Pests, bullies.
Right.
And he'll fight tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. And we had actually some house problems when we moved into our new house, and it was one of those things where he fought a huge insurance company and won because he doesn't get fearful and he's not afraid. So it doesn't matter. He knows right from wrong.
Right. That came through in the book, and it was refreshing. So thanks for sharing that.
I think when I went through some editing, it was important, I think, to bring a story right up front.
Right.
To show the biggest heart that he has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because maybe reading the book, the way it's structured, I guess, is that you might think, oh my God,
right,
this guy, oh wow.
No.
You know what? He'll fight for what's right. That is a wonderful thing.
Right. I love the way I use the word shielded you. He didn't protect you. He shielded you, and he was right there with you. And that was just heartwarming to read about that. So,
that's great. So great to hear that. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Yep.
So, well, you know, and as we're getting in and talking about the book, we're finishing up the second revision of our, we wrote a parenting book. And so, that is not a shameless plug for us, but I'm trying to relate to the challenges associated with writing books.
Right.
Have you always been a writer? Did you become a writer for this book, or tell us about your background with writing?
Yeah, you know what? I've been writing in a diary for years. Is that something?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Honestly, no. I'm not a writer. I you know, being in the business that we're in a marketing and graphic design business. I see great writing, but I'm more just a storyteller right now. I've you know, this wasn't something that I planned. It was just what happened a few years ago. I had an aunt pass away in Manhattan, and her death was very tragic, actually, and surprised us all. And she was an Emmy Award winning producer and writer. And when I would tell people the story about her, everyone was saying, oh my God, Laura, you have to write book about this. This is an incredible story, because it was that interesting. But it was really administering her estate that was very much part of my awakening, because it was the first time in all these years that I had to deal directly with my brother. And then I started to see the patterns, and I started to see that nothing had changed. And along with that, I was experiencing huge trauma in my body that I had no control over. It didn't matter what I did. I, you know, I've prayed and meditated my whole life, but this was something that was just there. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling, you know, so much anxious and all these things. And I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on here? And so, as you've heard in the book, this journey continued through that. And I started to explore about that. And I found out that my brother was not the only toxic person in my life. And that realization ultimately drove me to write the book. So there's been many years of secrets and lies and manipulations. And I just absolutely, at this point in my life, refuse to keep those secrets buried. And now that I've worked through that trauma, I want to tell. I've been told to be quiet and that my pain didn't matter. And now I'm realizing, yes, it did matter. And I think there's something I really want to talk about. So, and now I can talk about it and not feel so traumatized talking about it. So I have worked out that trauma to do this, or I wouldn't be able to talk to you today, because that trauma was always there in my body and I was experiencing it before I worked it out. So the book is very much written in my own voice, and I didn't want to have it edited too much. I want people to feel my pain and feel what I went through, and I hope that that comes across. So.
One of the questions, I had two questions. Well, the first one is, when you said you had other, you realized that you had other toxic people in your life.
Right.
Are they all in the book? Are these other toxic people in the book? Are all of them in the book, or were there others?
No, they're all in the book.
So it's, okay, so I know who they are. Yeah. The second question is, you began, you described graphically some of the somatic, some of the physical symptoms you had that must have been terrifying. When I first came to appreciate your husband was how he protected, how he was with you during those difficult times. And he really, he didn't minimize it in any way. And he worked through it with you and gave it the importance that it was due. How long did it take you from the time you began to experience those physical symptoms to the time that you felt you were really beginning to heal? How much time elapsed?
You know, I worked it out quickly, and I think I did that because I was journaling. I was, you know, I don't want to reveal the other way I did it. It was my own special way to meet little Laura. And I think talking to my psychologist, she said, Laura, you've worked it out and exposed that trauma in two ways. You've journaled it, plus, there were two ways that I worked it out. So the more I exposed it and brought it up and brought it out and understood it. So I think that I worked it out fairly quickly. I was determined to work it out quickly, and that's just my personality. I want to get to it fast.
Right.
And plus, I think the pain of what I was going through, it motivated me to do it in the best way that I, and fastest way that I could.
Right. Well, we've kind of alluded a little bit, and we certainly want folks to get out and get your book and read your story and you know, experience all that you have to share, but share a little bit about some of this that happened during your childhood that sort of set the stage for what happened a few years ago when after your aunt passed.
Right. So my childhood was a very sad and tragic one. There's a lot of talk these days about bullying. Well, I lived with a bully. And my bully, it wasn't anything that you could see. It was silent. It was hidden. It was invisible. There were the rules in my house that no bruises, no cuts, or else there'd be big trouble. So the bullying that I got was psychological. So there were threats to my safety. I witnessed cruelty to animals, so the threat to hurt me was very real. There was intimidation and fear that controlled me. There was continuous lies, continuous denials, manipulations. It was very sneaky and underhanded. My brother was very sly, very smart. The physical abuse that I got was one of restraint. It was holding me down, tickling and spitting and licking, anything that wouldn't end up with a bruise. And so if I complained, I was snickered at and laughed at, saying it was nothing. Because, see, there's no bruises on her. And then there was the ability to have two faces. There was the ability to show the nice face to everybody and say that I was the liar. I'm making things up. So he was very good at the lying. There didn't seem to be any remorse. There was a lack of empathy for anything that he did. And if he did get into trouble on the odd time, it didn't seem to matter. So my parents ignored my complaints, chalking it up to sibling rivalry. We were usually lumped together. Kids, stop it, that type of thing. So the abuse was going right on in front of them. And I was told it was just inconsequential. So I basically had no protection. And I had to learn to live with this bully. And I was basically in survival mode for many, many years until I was 9. And then at that time, I had a teacher that helped me out and could see that I was having some mental problems. So that was my childhood.
Great.
Early on in the book, you mentioned that you used the term psychological and emotional abuse simultaneously.
Yes.
Yeah, to you they're the same.
Well, for me, there is a difference. I know that at the foreword, emotional psychological are used, but I believe that there is a difference. I think they're both just as harmful. I think psychological abuse is more of an intentional pattern of behavior, so that there's an intent to harm. Somebody wants to hurt you. So I think that's used over very planned and specific means. I think there's an assumption out there with psychological abuse that there's yelling and screaming and name-calling and put-downs. But I think that this abuse is a little less obvious, and I think it's more insidious and covert, sneaky. Psychological abusers have patterns of intimidating others. They have a lack of empathy. They don't have remorse or guilt. They lie all the time. They gaslight, making people think that they're crazy. There's threats to safety. And I think sometimes that's subtle. Sometimes it's not so subtle. And there's sometimes isolation and financial abuse. And the very concerning thing is that these people have two sides to their character. So they have the ability to charm, and they can lie, and they can speak in half-truth. So that's concerning. And I think they blame victims for any problems. And if they're caught in lies, they simply reinvent a new truth. So they absolve themselves and further abuse the victim, and that's part of the illness. And I guess the other very concerning thing is they believe their own lies. And the difference to me with emotional abuse is that there's not that intention to harm. It's more like silent treatment. So I just heard that silent treatment is one of the worst forms of abuse, and that kind of abuse has the same chemical reaction in a brain. So someone is hurt, just as much as someone being hurt physically. So silent abuse is, to me, more emotional abuse. I guess that's the difference for me, the intention and the somebody that's just not even realizing that they're doing this, but they're doing it because that's the only way that they know how. So
yeah,
those are the differences to me anyway.
Those differences certainly make sense and are consistent with what we talked to Shannon Thomas about in talking about her book. Mm-hmm. What I think is really interesting that you, in your book and how you talk about the bully.
Yeah.
And, you know, we often think about bullies as the big kid who is physical and hits mm-hmm. other kids and pushes them around and everything. But yours in a very real way, again, was a sort of a psychological bully.
Exactly.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that really struck me in our some of our early correspondences back and forth in setting up this interview was you made the statement that, you know, the wanting to get the word out and wanting to help people understand that psychological abuse is just as damaging as physical or even sexual abuse.
Yes, yes. And I had done some research when all this kind of happened and why I was experiencing all this trauma. And I started reading up on, you know, some things stated by the American Psychological Association that children who are emotionally abused and neglected are facing similar and sometimes worse mental health problems as children who are physically and sexually abused.
Right.
And yet psychological abuse is rarely addressed in prevention programs or in treating victims, according to the APA. I also read up on a study that they published in the Psychological Trauma Theory Research Practice and Policy publication. And their paper was called Unseen Wounds, the Contribution of Psychological Maltreatment to Child and Adolescent Mental Health and Risk Outcomes. And what that study had confirmed to me, or to as I read, is that children who experienced psychological maltreatment were dealing with the same or perhaps even worse mental health problems
right.
than those children that experienced physical and sexual abuse. So the study had found that the children who experienced psychological abuse experienced PTSD just as often as children experiencing other forms of maltreatment. And they concluded that there was a need for greater attention on psychological maltreatment. So that rung so true with me. And I'm always tweeting out what our psychological abuse, like what happens with children and psychological abuse, and that's eating disorders, low self-esteem, anxiety, depression, withdrawal from society, rebellious conduct, sleep problems, physical complaints, suicide attempts. So when I started reading all this stuff, it ran true with me. And as a child, I was so withdrawn. I had no self-esteem. I had anxiety. I was having nightmares. So I had experienced a lot of these things that I was reading. So yeah, psychological abuse, that's my key message, I guess, to try and get people to start thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, and as you, even as you've talked about the things that you've talked about so far, I think that what's striking about your story is that, again, we oftentimes hear stories about childhood abuse and these adverse childhood experiences and things like that. And, you know, your abuser, maybe, you know, maybe not as typical as what we often hear about, was a sibling.
Right.
And while, you know, the sibling was the primary abuser, you also write about how your parents, I think you may have used the word complicit. They knew what was going on. They didn't really do much to change it. There was almost the unsaid approval of
right.
what was happening. And the psychological impact of that, you know, is immeasurable. So talk to us a little bit about what that was like in your experience. the people that were supposed to protect you are the one are not protecting you.
Yeah. So what that was like was traumatizing. I heard a statement once just recently, what you ignore, you empower.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's so true. I really had wished that we got help, and we didn't get help. I recently, I don't know if you've ever seen a video that, and now it's a little older. It was in 1987. It was called Little Girl, Child of Rage. I think she might have been even on Dr. Phil. And it was a couple of children that were adopted by a family in Minnesota. He was a minister. They didn't know the background of the children. The little girl had some very terrible behavior, horrific behavior. She was sticking pins into her brother. She was abusing animals. She had no remorse, no empathy. She wanted to kill her parents and her brother. And then they started to look into the past of the little girl, and she had been sexually abused by her father, her biological father. And I recently saw an article about this little girl who got help. And she is now a productive nurse helping others with the same problems. And all I could do was cry, because I thought, you know what? She was given a chance to those personality, I guess what had, those very concerning personality traits had been changed by therapy and by help. So it showed to me that, yes, children can get help. And that was like an extreme case. But when I saw what I, you know, where it went, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. So, you know, parents do need to act and not ignore, because ignoring things is just not gonna, it's just not gonna fix things.
Absolutely.
Yep. A related question,
yes.
Because I wondered through the entire book, as I read about your reaction to your parents, their inability or unwillingness to intervene and to protect you, that would affect your attachment to them. Two questions. What were you aware as a little girl that you were either angry with them or that you felt that they were you angry about that?
No.
Okay. So you weren't aware of any feelings that you had?
No. I wasn't. You know, it was all, my blame went on to my sibling, my brother. Yeah. And, you know, it really, the awakening so late in my life, realizing, oh my God, he wasn't just born like that. There was a responsibility for my parents to protect me.
Right. Right.
And so it's funny, there was just a recent party with a bunch of girls, and we got together, and we started sharing some stories, and I told them about the book, and one of them said, well, do you blame your parents? And I said, yes,
right.
I do.
Yeah.
I blame my parents, but you know what? Not a lot of people want to talk about that because they know if they do, what's going to happen. And, you know, the parents are not going to be too happy by talking about this or changing behavior. And so a lot of it, I think a lot of the time, it doesn't get dealt with.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, mentioning attachment, you know, In developmental psychology or psychology in general, we think about attachment theory, and you know, we have lots of theories about how different things develop and how different things progress over time. And the theory of attachment, I think, is a fascinating and really important area of psychology, because it talks about sort of some of this specific stuff that, you know, during early childhood, we develop these attachments to our parents, and from that attachment and you know, sort of rooted in our temperament, comes our personality and some of those other long-term traits. From your experiences and what you've read and everything, what do you see as it pertains to the relationship between, you know, these attachments and personality and what that has meant for you and your life and with your sibling and parents and everything?
I think it's huge. I really think that we have to start talking about the attachment theory. I did explore that, and I have written that at the back part of the book, I guess, just on what I had read about Dr. John Bowlby, who did that research on the attachment theory. And I thought, well, that makes sense because, again, for anyone reading the book, they can see how that theory also comes through in my family. So, again, I don't want to go into too much detail about the book. I'm hoping that people read it and see. But yeah, I think the quality of love and care from one primary caregiver is, for a child up to three, will have a tremendous impact on that youngster. And that this is something that we all need to start talking about for sure. You know, because in the attachment theory, there's what it emphasizes is that the strong emotional and physical attachment is critical to that child's growth in early years. And if a child doesn't have that security, children will become fearful and less likely to seek and learn new experiences. And there's a high risk for low empathy. So yes, that theory definitely works with what I think anyway. And from when I've looked back at what happened in our childhoods.
Yeah. In your case, the person who was abusing you.
Yes.
You finally concluded that at the root of this was a personality disorder.
I concluded that behaviors pointed to that. Again, I guess I want to be, I want to say that I'm not a psychologist. I can only see what constitutes a personality disorder. I could see the patterns from childhood leading into adulthood, and I did have an awakening. So I can't say for sure. I don't think anybody can unless somebody is diagnosed, but certainly that's what where it pointed for me. And I have made my conclusion. I was very careful in the book to try and concentrate so much on the behaviors,
right,
and what was so concerning, and leave people to come to their own conclusions as they go through it.
You succeeded in doing that. You were on a very thin edge. You were on the razor's edge during that section of the book. And
yes,
I thought, I wonder how...
I really want people to make their own discoveries and do their own research and maybe make parallels in their world so that, you know, oh, let me look that up. Okay, yeah.
Right.
And maybe, you know, it'll help others to see what would constitute a personality disorder.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so you left enough breadcrumbs lying around for people to follow exactly. And I think you did a masterful job in that section.
Good.
Yeah, you really did.
I can't say for sure. Not a psychologist. Nobody's had any, nobody's gone and had diagnosis. So I'm very careful to say I can only do parallels.
Right. And when you did bring it up, you brought it up in the context of your therapist. It was really your therapist who did it. And that was completely appropriate. So, you did. That was good. That was really well done.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, in speaking of the therapist and everything, when was it that you began receiving any mental health treatment? Was it during childhood, your adolescence, or adulthood?
No, really what had happened was it was after my aunt's estate closed and certain circumstances happened, and then that led me to some conclusions. And I realized, you know what, every time I talked about the whole circumstance, I've got trauma, so I better start dealing with this. And, you know, you can't pray it away. You can't, you know, it's something that you can't become mindful and it go away. I think this stuff is hardwired in our brains, and we need to get help when these types of things are happening to us. So it was then I sought out a psychologist and somebody who knows about personality disorders and psychological abuse, and I thought that would help me understand what I was going through. So that's definitely when I started to get help and work out that trauma, and it was quite intense. It's, you know, as a little child, if you've got your life threatened, that trauma doesn't go away. That's there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's when I started to get some help.
Right. When you talk, you've talked to other people, haven't you? I mean, other victims?
Yes.
When there is this little wet blanket that I think victims carry around, that they feel that they should be strong and they should be able to overcome this. What do you, and you really can't, unless you've been a victim yourself, it's hard to understand the extent to which the extent to which this affects you.
Right.
And, you know, people who aren't victims will just say, oh no, you have to soldier through and persevere and get over it. What do you advise others?
Get help.
Okay.
It is definitely something that has to be, in my opinion, worked out with a psychologist, mm-hmm. and somebody who has great understanding, because you're right, you can't just, you know, come on. Think positive and mm-hmm. all those. No, this is more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be worked out, but it has to be worked out, in my opinion, with a professional.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I think is fantastic about everything that we've talked about today, but also everything that we read in the book, is that, you know, you lived through these experiences. You lived through these traumas. You made it through adolescence, into adulthood. You began working. You began doing these different things. You became independent. You have, you know, your marriage. You have all these things going on in your life. And you received treatment for a lot of these things afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what's an impressive and incredible part of the story that I think that, you know, I would love for the listeners to hear about is this idea of resilience.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that there are traits that some people have. I'm mentioning this real specifically because we hear stories of, you know, and this certainly isn't to minimize anybody's experiences, but we hear stories like Oprah's story. And people say, well, you know, Oprah did it, so you should be able to do it. You know, Oprah lived through that trauma, so anybody should be able to live through that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Oprah has a set of intrinsic traits that make her incredibly resilient.
Yeah.
Clearly, you have a set of skills. You have a set of traits that make you incredibly resilient to be able to go through that, be affected by it in the way that you have been, but yet still find a way to, in the very least, piece together this life that you have been living until you reached the point where you received therapy and were able to work through it all to get
You were resilient enough to get to therapy,
right?
You know that's part of the impressive part of this is where does that come from?
Well, you know what, I don't want to preach. I'm not a minister or anything, but I think it's my faith, and I think the fact that I'm a spiritual person and I've been praying my whole life. And that has been a daily thing with me. That and since I was young, I mean, you'll see pictures of me with my hands together in prayer. So I don't know if that's, you know, I think it's a big thing. To me, even writing the book, I feel pushed to do it almost. I feel that God has a plan, and that He wants us to love one another, and He wants us to find the answer. Hmm. So I can't tell others that will work for them. I can only tell you it's worked for me. My husband, who you've mentioned, doesn't have the same type of faith that I do. He's resilient in his way, but this is what has worked for me, and I just believe that that's really helped. And that, along with probably laughter, I've got a huge sense of humor.
it comes through even on the audit. Just listening to you, it comes through. So
yeah, yes. I love to laugh. So it's. Mm-hmm. I think laughter heals. I just watching the Emmys last night, Norman Lear said that laughter adds time to our life.
Right.
And I read once that Norman Cousins had healed himself from serious illness by watching funny movies.
Yes, he did. Yes, he
yeah,
did.
Yeah, so I think laughter, if we can at least try and laugh through all of this, even, you know, you hear about some Holocaust survivors that will talk about how they made fun even in the worst of conditions. Mm-hmm. So laughter heals in my eyes, and I guess the arts as well. I was a singer for many years.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was very healing for mm-hmm. me. I guess I was a bit of a rebel and thought, ugh.
Yeah, you did. You sounded like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to do it. And you know what? I had absolutely no fear with singing. I still don't have any fear. I don't have stage fright or anything like that. That's just something inside me, I suppose. But music is very important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And rescuing animals is important in my life, too. So.
Amazing.
And you know what? Having a wonderful husband and a son.
I told you. That guy's terrific, man. That guy, I'm telling you.
Well, you know, but the way that the things that you were talking about, and I think that this is consistent with so many things that we talk about here on our podcast, of the things that you talked about as factors that helped you work through it, all of those things are stress relieving. You know,
yeah.
whether it's your faith, it's a belief in something. Whether it's God or it's, you know, science or it's
music,
it's yeah. laughter, whatever it is, it's a belief in something that stabilizes yeah. you, that brings you some of that foundation. You know, we know biologically, mm-hmm. we know that the type of laugh that you have, Laura, that rich, like strong laugh. You know, if we want to think about that biologically, it stimulates the vagal nerve.
The vagal nerve
that's going to help relieve stress in your brain to help you in singing,
you know,
especially singing loudly. Releases.
You know, what he's saying is your music and your laughter are connected to the same nerve, the same cranial nerve.
Yeah,
we can explain that another time. but
that's interesting. I haven't heard. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. So biologically, you're very intact.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. It, but all of that serves that purpose mm-hmm. of relieving stress. And it sounds like that is something that really helped you manage things until you got you know, the full support and help that right. you needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So yeah, you had multiple supports in a sense. Laughter, faith, yeah. a husband, partners, the dogs. I mean, all of these things contributed to your resilience and your ability to persevere until you could resolve it.
Right.
And so that's also important, and I think an important thing for people. Left without all of that, I think it's a much different kind of journey.
And we left out journaling.
Right, and journaling.
We were teasing a little bit about it earlier, you know, mm-hmm. whether that was counted as writing, but you even mentioned it, that that was a significant part, it sounds mm-hmm. like, of your processing it all.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The journaling is, you know, highly, highly recommended.
Right.
I think when I started writing everything out, I started understanding. Mm-hmm. I started to see, oh, now I get it. Now right. I see what's going on. And as I continued to write, I saw it all. It's kind of weird, but it works and was extremely helpful to me.
Well, we have that famous saying for writers, you learn to write and you write to learn.
Yes.
And when you write, you learn what you're, it's a process of discovery.
Yes.
As you're writing, you're discovering, things about yourself and about your past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. It really is a wonderful process.
Yeah.
It's how we write our reports. As you're writing your report, you realize what you don't know about the patient, and it's a very helpful, constructive process.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we have kept you a long time on a...
Now, is your husband there?
On a Monday evening.
I'm going to talk to him for a minute. I'm just kidding.
But we've definitely kept you late on a Monday evening, and we appreciate your time. But how can our listeners learn more about you and get your book, and where should they go to follow everything that you mentioned, tweeting out different things yeah. earlier? Where can they go to follow you?
So, yes, I have a Twitter, Laura_Corbeth, and I encourage people to join me, and we can share together. The website is My Courage to Tell, where they can read some things there. I've got a little, I've talked about adverse childhood experiences, which I'm very passionate about. The book is going on sale the Kindle book starting tomorrow until September 25th. And I think for the print book, it's on Amazon. If people want to get it at for a discount, what I can do is leave a discount code on my website for 30% off. The only catch is they would need to go to CreateSpace, which is Amazon's printer, actually. But they need to create an account. And then they would just put in a discount code and they could get the book at 30% off. So I can leave that on the website and people can do it that way. If they're comfortable, that's, you know, it's one of those things. Some people are just mm-hmm. comfortable going to Amazon and mm-hmm. getting things that way. So
absolutely. Well, we'll certainly put a link to all of that in the show notes. And this is the book. It's a great, great. I thought it was going to fall. It's a great.
We'll support.
If you saw the little,
you should see this fancy book stand.
Now that's creative.
See, I'm gonna leave that in the show so that everybody can see how I stand right. the books up.
Hey, you know what? There's a good business idea right there.
There right. we go.
That's right.
But Laura, it has been fantastic talking with you. You know, anytime you ever want to come back on the show, please feel free to give us a shout. We are happy to have you on and talk with you. And
well, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, there's a lot more to be said about adverse childhood events, and so you know, yeah. If you ever want to come back on and talk some more about that, we are here and ready to talk.
Absolutely, fantastic.
Okay. All right.
Well, have a good evening.
You too, Laura. Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.